This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Raise Your Game. I'm Tasha Fusil. Now, say you've got an idea for a business that you think could really take off. How do you then take that germ of an idea through the necessary steps to mold and make it into a lasting, profitable business? Mike Southern goes through exactly that in his book, The Beer Mat Entrepreneur, to share the tricks and tips that any entrepreneur ought to know before embarking on a business. Thank you so much for joining us, Mike.
My pleasure.
So, okay, you say business is easy. Why? Mm.
Yes, that's quite a sort of interesting thing to start the book with. Now, what we say is that business is easy in that it's intellectually quite simple. I mean, it's hard work and long hours. I won't dissuade people from that. But in its very simple terms, we try to make the book quite a simple book in terms of easy steps to follow. You just do simple things well, as I'm sure many people say, then you will have success.
Right, so it's easy if you know what to do.
Absolutely, and what we aim to do is put a very simple roadmap in place. And the book's called The Beer Mat Entrepreneur because that's quite a British metaphor, because here in London we often go down to the pub and we write on a beer mat, which is that little disc of paper that you put your beer on. But it is a metaphor. You could go down to a restaurant and write on a napkin, or back in the old days people used to talk about writing things on cigarette packets. So we're all beer mat entrepreneurs in London. We go to the pub, and there should be three people around a pub table just kicking around their idea for a business, and we put together a plan about doing that.
Okay, and have you ever started a business based on a beer mat idea?
Oh, no, absolutely. Back in 1983, I was in a pub in Bradford in the north of England with some of my university friends. And at the time, I thought I was going to be a chemical engineer and build oil refineries, but the oil refinery business was in a bit of a slump at the time. But two of my friends happened to be experts at a particular computer operating system called Unix, or often called Linux nowadays. And that was quite rare in those days. We're talking early 80s. And we basically put together an idea for business there in the pub by literally writing on a beer mat. On the basis that there weren't very many people in the world that knew about this Unix thing, and how could we build a business around their expertise? And then pretty soon after that, the three of us started a company called The Instruction Set here in London. And we started off doing Unix training, and we started with three in a basement room in 1984, and then 5 years later we had 150 people and we sold the company. Then after that, I worked on lots of other startups with different people. Some of them went public and some of them went broke, and I had a lot of entrepreneurial experience. I remember going to university and I was telling stories about entrepreneurship, and somebody said, you should write a book about that. So what I did was at that time, I took the best piece of advice I know give to entrepreneurs, which is to find what we call a foil, or somebody with the opposite set of skills, because I'm quite an extrovert guy. I've always had a sales job. I'm always out there talking to customers. Whereas my foil is somebody who's much more introverted, but is good at delivering things. Now, in the case of the book, it was my best friend from school, a chap called Chris West, a very clever man, who's a novelist and a philosopher. So a philosopher makes logical models, and a novelist writes novels. So he basically took all my experience and turned it into a logical model, which became The Beer Mat Entrepreneur. Then he actually wrote the books. He was a novelist. And it's like a story. Once upon a time, three friends go down to a pub and they write on a beer mat and they turn their good idea into a great business. That's the premise of the book. So yes, I meet beer mat entrepreneurs all the time. I do a lot of mentoring, and sometimes it's in pubs and we're writing on beer mats, but it can be just a scrap of paper. But the key thing is it's quite a simple process, and it's a bunch of friends just, in the first stage, just putting their ideas together, and then you take those steps and you turn your good idea into a great business.
Okay, great. Is the book more suited for entrepreneurs that are just starting out, or can entrepreneurs looking to scale up, you know, learn a thing or two from the book?
It's both, because it does start with three friends in a pub just kicking their idea about, but it takes you through the various stages. We call it in the book seedling, sapling, and mighty oak, to use the metaphor of a tree in this case. So it does take you all the way up to, world domination is one way of putting it, but to quite a large business which you might want to sell. I would say The Beer Mat Entrepreneur is really for anybody who's got a good idea for a business. You know, they just had an idea sometime about a business, all the way through to somebody looking to, you know, maybe sell their company to 150 people, which is what we did with our company back in 1989 the first time.
Let's look at the seedling stage then. What would make initially a good business idea? How would a person know that they've got a good business idea in their hands?
That's always a great question. Well, what we put on our, what we call the original beer mat, was three things in this little order. So you're just in a pub or in a restaurant, in a coffee shop, and here are the three things that you put on your initial scrap of paper or beer mat or whatever you're doing with it. The three things are, first thing is an elevator pitch, which is, what is the elevator pitch to your business? And this is an American term. Here in England, we might call it a lift pitch, but everybody uses the term elevator pitch. What's the short description of your business idea that you could pitch to somebody in an elevator? And as I explain, you're in an elevator. You've only got four floors. You've probably got 15 or 30 seconds to pitch your idea to that person. The elevator doesn't get stuck for several hours. You have to keep it pretty snappy. So I can go through the detail of what an elevator pitch might be. But once you've got your elevator pitch, then here's the most important part of entrepreneurship, the key success factor. We said, next, mentor. Find a mentor. In the first stage, just somebody who can give you some great idea for free, because that's what a mentor does, about your business. You bounce it off somebody straight away. Because I hear lots of good ideas when ideas are pitched to me. I must have mentored face-to-face about 1,000 people. And to be quite honest, every business idea I've heard has been brilliant. I've always thought, wow, someone's going to make a lot of money doing that. It's whether it's the person I'm speaking to is the issue at that time. So find a mentor. This could be a school teacher you know or a business person. Somebody can tell you about your idea and hopefully find your first customer, because that's the third thing on a beer map. Because you've had a good idea, you've got it into an elevator pitch, and I can go into more detail on that in a minute. You've spoken to a mentor who says, that's a good idea, maybe I can introduce you to a few people. The next thing is, the difference between a good business idea and a bad business idea is that in a good business idea, somebody gives you money for your product or service. In a bad business idea, they don't. Now, that may sound very simple, but I worked on a couple of software companies in the 90s where brilliant people had brilliant software, but at the end of the day, nobody wanted to buy it. They all said, oh, we'll have a free copy, that's great, but would they put their hand in their pocket and give you real money, maybe for an hour's work or an initial trial of a product? Because they won't do that, because that's why sales is so important. Because after we've done Beer Mad Entrepreneur, I spend a lot of time teaching people how to get those crucial early sales and then grow your business. So that's the beer mat methodology, really simply. You have an elevator pitch, you have a mentor, and you have a first customer. If you've got those together and people are giving you money, then you've got the basis for a business. It is as simple as that.
How can you expand more on the elevator pitch for those who are not familiar with this concept?
Well, elevator pitches, when I get into more detail, I say there should be five things beginning with the letter P. Because a lot of people say, well, I've got an idea for a great mousetrap. And I say, well, that's the second P. You always start with the first P. Is P for pain or problem. There's a pain or problem out there, and somebody needs to solve it. And if they do, hope you'll get some money. So a good elevator pitch will say something like, you know how it's very difficult to do such and such, or I can't get a good cup of coffee in my village, or I have too many mice in my warehouse. There's a pain or a problem. Then you hit them with the second P, which is P for premise. So we're going to have a better mousetrap, or we're going to make a fantastic cup of coffee or a coffee service. So this is exactly what your business does in very literal terms. So there's the first two P's, pain and premise. Third one is P for people, because you've got to get some good people around you. Now, you don't need a big team from day one. You need somebody who's obviously going to make the coffee or make the mousetrap. That's one person, a delivery person. Or you need somebody a bit more like me, who's a salesperson. I'm thinking, oh, my customers, my friends will buy this from me. So sales and delivery are the two. And the only third job is finance, which is, let's say, lots of people are buying your coffee and you're making lots of coffee and so on. Are you making any money? So sales, delivery, and finance. That's your initial beer mat team in the pub, if you like. So it's all about people. Who are you going to have in your organization? Could be just you at the beginning doing all three jobs. Some people start there, a sole trader it's called. But then soon you're going to get a foil, hopefully. So if you're an introvert, you get an extrovert, and an extrovert, you get an introvert. And a great metaphor I use when I'm speaking live is I'm a big fan of the band The Beatles. I'm sure people have heard of The Beatles. And they wrote a great song together, John Lennon and Paul McCartney, called Getting Better, where Paul McCartney says, got to admit it's getting better all the time. And then John Lennon says, can't get any worse. So that's like an optimist and a pessimist or a realist. Right. So that's a good yin and yang you can put together for a business. So P for people is the third one. Get some good people together, at least one extrovert and one introvert. Then you've got the basis for a business. Then after that, it's P for proof, which is your first customer is the hardest, always. The first person to take a bit of a chance on your business, perhaps, because you're not known. Then you have proof. Once you've got one customer, you can say, well, I've got a fantastic cup of coffee. Look, have a chat with my friend who just bought one. You've got a reference customer. You can say, look, we're really good. Have a chat with somebody who's actually bought our product or service. That's the real proof. And there you're very nearly there. You've got four good P's there. You've got pain, premise, people, and proof. The final P is, what is the P for purpose of your business? And in the first stage, it's to make money, because if it makes money, good. If it doesn't make money, you have a problem. But later, a lot of people have a distinct social purpose to what they do, and I'm very keen on these people, social entrepreneurs, because they have a proper business. It's not a charity, but the business is doing some good in the world. It could be just recruiting people, for example, getting people work. It could be cleaning the environment. It could be teaching kids. A lot of young people, especially I meet today, have a real purpose to their business. Yeah, make money, of course, because that's what a business is. But the purpose is they're going to make the world a better place in the process and get rich and have money for their family and all those good things. I'd say the main ones of your elevator pitch are the pain, there's a problem, premise, and then proof. Those are the three basic ones. But you always put in about the people, because if you've got terrible people, you're going to have a bad business. If you've got great people, you have a good business. Then always think about your purpose. Make money first, but then later, are you going to make the world a better place in the process? Okay. So that's your elevator pitch, five P's.
And are these five P's, pain, premise, people, proof, and purpose, are they similar to the five tests that a business needs to pass in order to succeed?
Absolutely, because it's all about trying things and seeing if they work. So that's why we try to make our book very pragmatic. You know, literally, step by step, you try things. But I say the most important thing is, will people give you money for your product and service? So that's why your first sale you often do to a friend. That could be your best friend, you know, somebody you've known for many years or somebody from school. It could be a friend you had in a previous business, you just got on well with, who likes you and trusts you, because it's all about trust, of course. So always test the sales model wherever you can. I'm obviously a little bit biased in that, because I've always been a salesperson. I'm always testing sales models. When everybody gives me an idea, I'm already thinking, would my friends buy it? Let me ask them. So the key test in the book is really, you know, getting sales, getting real money off people. And then afterwards they say, do you know what? I spent some money with you. That was great value for money, because value for money is key. Because that's, at the end of the day, often how you measure things. Did I get value for money out of that product and service?
And I suppose according to, you know, the strengths and weaknesses of a person, some people are going to find some of these P's a bit more challenging than others.
Of course, that's why it's so good to build up a good team. So, for example, a lot of people, you know, especially delivery people, people like my friend Chris West, my co-author, they're quite shy. So they'd rather not be in front of customers every single day or speaking at conferences. I mean, I speak at a lot of conferences. I love to do it. It's something I love to do. Whereas I'm not so good on the delivery side. So that's why a balanced team is key. So having a good extrovert, somebody who likes going and talking to people, you know, strangers possibly, but certainly their friends and their network, as well as a good delivery person. Because in entrepreneurship, you make a promise, you know, we're going to make you a great cup of coffee. Then you keep the promise. Here is your great cup of coffee. And there's usually two people involved in this. So you can do it, you can do it all yourself. You can be a sole trader. So if somebody's a self-employed plumber, for example, they're getting business, they're solving plumbing problems, and then hopefully doing their books at the end of the day. But as soon as you can build a team of people who are doing what they love to do every day. So I get very bored if I'm in an office all day. I have to be out there talking to customers. That's me. Whereas other people prefer to be in an office all day, maybe delivering a product or service. So it's all about balanced teams.
Mike Southern, the author of The Beerman Entrepreneur. More in just a moment. This is BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Good morning. It's time to raise your game. I'm Tasha Fusil. And if you've just joined us, I'm speaking to Mike Southern. He's the author of The Beerman Entrepreneur, a book that looks to share the tricks and tips that any entrepreneur should be looking at before they embark on a business. Who are the cornerstones that you refer to in the book?
We use the model in our book of having five cornerstones ultimately, because that's what we had at my company, the instruction set back in the 80s. And they cover all the bases, and different companies will have different sets of people. But now I say to people, look, don't worry about having five straight away. Let's worry about just two at the beginning, an introvert and an extrovert. Building to three, that's finance. Then the other two could be maybe different kinds of delivery cornerstones. So, for example, in my company, we had some people who were very technical, more like research and development. They like to write software, whereas other people like going out in front of people and teaching software. So that could be how it works. But five is like a magic number. A lot of bands you see out there have five members. Well, they're four members and a manager. So it's just like a team dynamic. But at the first stage, I say to people, look, you can be a sole trader, just work on your own. That's one model. And it's entrepreneurship, nothing wrong with that. But the sooner you can get your foil or your opposite. So when I mentor people for the first time, I get them to do a little it's not even a psychometric test. It's a personality test called Talent Dynamics. Very similar to wealth dynamics, which people may know. That's just a simple test which finds out the kind of jobs that people love to do. So you can begin to understand yourself, which is key, then understand who your foil is or your opposite. So if you're an extrovert, you need an introvert, and an introvert is an extrovert. So again, I try to keep team building really simple at first. So two or three friends in a coffee shop or restaurant talking around a business is a very good start. So as long as you cover the three bases of business, which is delivery, sales, and finance.
And I guess it's also important for these people involved to be completely aware of what roles they have and what to expect from one another as well. Because I think that's where miscommunications or disagreements can happen, when they're not clear on what to expect from another person.
Absolutely. That's the basis of entrepreneurship, everybody doing the job that they're suited for. Of course, some days people have to do different things. Like, for example, later today I'm going to have to do my tax return, which is not my favorite job for my psychometric. I'd rather be talking to customers. But I kind of, you know, grit my teeth and do it because, you know, I've got to do it kind of thing. So not every day we're doing what we love. But if people, as you say, understand their key roles, so let's get Mike out selling as much as possible. Not 100% of the time. That's, you know, I wish life was that simple. But the more we have Mike in front of customers, the better. Whereas the more we have Chris doing delivery, the better. And there may be a third person who's good at finance who's doing that all day long. And they, you know, they have specific skills in that area. So understanding each other, building up trust. So, for example, we trust Mike, the salesman, to be out there selling. You know, if he's out selling, you know, he's doing what he likes and he's delivering customers, which is great. We trust Chris to do some writing today because that's what his delivery is, and so on. So it's about building up trust and people doing what they're best at and what they're happiest at. There's a nice expression called being in flow. So when I'm out speaking or selling, I'm in flow. So I know I'm in flow because time shrinks. I'm thinking, gosh, I've been speaking for an hour, but it's been like 5 minutes for me. So I'm enjoying what I do. Whereas when I do my tax return later, every hour seems to drag on because it's not my favorite job. So I'm out of flow. So if you can get people in flow as much as possible, so they understand themselves and the jobs that they're absolutely brilliant at, what they love to do, then you have a balanced team and you can rely on other people to do the key things. Because each job is as important as each other. So it's very important to get customers in, of course. Very important we deliver to what we've promised the customers. And it's very important that we make money in the business. Those are the three key areas.
How does the dream team come into play, you know, to get working together with the cornerstones? Like, how does it all come together?
Well, it comes together, sometimes I say, a little bit by magic. You're in the right place at the right time with the right people. Now, of course, magic doesn't happen every day. You have to kind of engineer magic. But always go back to people that you know and like, and you understand what their skill sets are. So I say to people, if I just meet them for the first time, it's a single individual who's got a good idea. You know, think about what your strengths and weaknesses are and be honest with yourself and make sure you have people with complementary skills that you enjoy spending time with. So, for example, Chris West and I will have very robust discussions about something, but we'll look at it from two different angles. So we've got an idea for something we want to do, and I'm just thinking it purely from the idea of, will this create attraction in the marketplace? Will people buy it? I mean, I assume he's going to deliver it, and he's working the other way around, which he assumes people are going to buy it, but will it be technically very sound? So we look at it from two different perspectives, and then the third person looks at it from a perspective of, will it make money? So, yes, building up trust, knowing what you're good at, finding a dream team. It's like, you know, finding a life partner. You know, you have to get out there and network and talk to people, and you can't just sit there and wait for it to happen. So the more proactive you are. And shy people can do that on the internet. You know, they can contact with people on the internet because that's how they prefer to interact with people. Me, I'm out there talking to people in pubs and restaurants and at conferences because I'm quite an extrovert. A gregarious kind of chap. So it's, but building the team, I'm not saying it's easy, but you have to work at it, but you'll know when the right team comes together. And again, if I go back to my metaphor of the Beatles started off as five people. There were two people who didn't work out. One guy, the bass player Stuart Sutcliffe, he'd rather be an art student, so he left the band. They were down to four. There was a drummer who I know quite well, a chap called Pete Best. And he was replaced with Ringo Starr in about 1962. It was a bit of a turmoil at the time, but it was very hard on Pete because the Beatles went on to be the biggest band in the world. But I think most people would say that maybe the Beatles became the Beatles when Ringo joined. So sometimes there's a few ups and downs in putting your dream team together. But you know when it's working because everything's falling into place. Customers are knocking on your door and you're delivering your product and service successfully. And you look, your finance guy or lady is saying, we're making lots of money. You know, there's profit dropping to the bottom line. Whereas if you're always arguing or fighting, you don't agree about things, or there's a missing character in the team, then you'll be struggling, which is usually measured by, you know, we haven't got the profits that we were hoping for. So it's not easy finding a dream team, but that's the hardest job in entrepreneurship, is building that team. And when you get it right, it's the Beatles. When you get it wrong, it's a band that's not successful. That's what happens.
Okay. And what makes an intrapreneur then?
Intrapreneur, yes, it's exactly the same set of skills, except they have to be aware that in large companies there are processes and forms to fill in, and there's ways of doing things they've been doing for many, many years. Because our second book was called The Boardroom Entrepreneur, which is exactly looking at that problem. So you still have a bunch of friends in a pub or coffee shop or restaurant kicking around an idea. But then when you go into the company, you have to be aware that certain people like doing things a certain way. There may be rules that are there, you know, prevent you going to prison, for example. There's, in large companies, have all sorts of rules to, you know, stifle entrepreneurship where they can, just to make sure that, you know, they don't get into trouble. So that's where the mentor, or as it's often called in a large organization, the sponsor, is so useful, because they do the same job as a mentor for a small company, which is, let's just look at your idea and, you know, how do we make money at it, and so on, and who could be our customers. But what the mentor in a large organization does is make them aware of the processes of the company. It could be just something simple like timing, which is, you know, let's say we have an idea now, it's April when we're speaking. Now is not a good time to do it. We should be doing this in September. So it's about timing. Or we want to do something which doesn't scare people too much, because it's a little bit different to what we've done here before for many years. So it's a different model in that you have to be aware of process. And I often make the joke that when I meet early stage entrepreneurs building their own business, it's all about break the rules, do something different, do something new and interesting. With an entrepreneur, it's kind of the opposite, which is let's keep to the rules, let's have more process and understand that we don't upset somebody internally, inadvertently usually.
Right.
Yes, I see a lot of entrepreneurship, and all large companies have entrepreneurship going on if they're successful. Because the magic slogan we always say in a large organization, if you have a new idea, is, and it doesn't come from me, I've taken it from somewhere else, which is you never ask for permission in a large organization, you just ask for forgiveness afterwards, which is, yes, we're a bit naughty, we should have filled in more forms and looked after a few more rules and so on, but we have got a good result here, so are we forgiven? And if you've made money, you're usually forgiven, as long as you haven't upset too many people.
Okay. Well, I've got some, like, I've got a 3M post-it note right in front of me, and it's just reminding me how you mentioned that, you know, Arthur Fry, you know, he was a classic of
it. Oh, yeah. He was great. And again, he had this crazy idea for this, it was the post-it note, wasn't it, that he did?
Yeah.
3M, which is, and it came, this is one that Chris put into the book, which is, you know, he just wanted something for his hymn books to put a marker in it, a glue that didn't work very well. So again, if you went to a glue company and says, I've got this idea for glue that doesn't work terribly well, it doesn't work permanently, it would say, what on earth are you talking about? But it's turned out to be a huge success. So you never know. Ideas come from everywhere. This was just putting markers in his hymn book so he could find the place for the right hymn at the right time in his church.
Please correct me if I'm wrong, but The Pyramid Entrepreneur was written in 2002 and revised in 2008. How well do you think the principles fit in today's landscape where, you know, virtually anyone can be an entrepreneur? The landscape has changed so much. You can source just about anything online, from capital to expertise to manufacturing.
Absolutely. It certainly is a different world to 2002 when the book came out. But Chris and I continually look at the BMAT entrepreneur and say, should we change anything radically? Because, you know, times have changed, you know, times have moved on. And our conclusion is that, you know, we're only making little tiny tweaks. We actually say, look, entrepreneurship is a lot easier than it used to be because, I mean, here in the United Kingdom, for example, a lot of people work from home, which back in the day, you know, back in the 80s, certainly when I, you know, started my first business with my friends, you know, that was really kind of unheard of in a way. Very few people did it, whereas very more people do. And yes, I mean, a lot of the companies I worked with helped build some of the internet. So I've been working with the internet or pre-internet since the 80s. And, you know, I couldn't have imagined that the world would be so easy to contact people now. And, like, you know, your website has all these, you know, great interviews on it. You know, I couldn't even have visualized that back in the day when we were, you know, looking at the original infrastructure of what became the World Wide Web.
Right.
So I think it's easier now, but I think the basic principles in our book still hold clear, which is it's still a bunch of friends, two or three friends, going down to a coffee shop or a restaurant or a pub and kicking an idea around and coming up with the basics of a business. Because in one respect, business hasn't changed. An individual says, am I interested in this product or service? Is it good value for money? Will it solve my problem? Of course, it's a lot easier to find things and you can work internationally very easily. So, yeah, so the internet and advances in technology, I think, have made the process easier. And also, I think the whole mindset of people is, again, back in the 80s, you know, I wasn't taught at school, even before that, to be an entrepreneur. It just wasn't heard of in those days. It was expected, the kind of school I went to, that I'd go and be in the army or go and work for government or something like that or become an academic. It was, you know, becoming an entrepreneur and working for yourself wasn't really an option back then. Whereas now, most young people think, yeah, I can be an entrepreneur if I've got a good idea and if my friends will buy it in my local area, then I can build a business around that. So it's a lot easier than it used to be. But I mean, it's for other people to say, but Chris and I say we often look at the book and think, could we improve things or could we change things? And our conclusion is, no, the basic principles are the same as they have always been. It's just a lot easier nowadays, I think.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Mike.
My pleasure.
That was Mike Southern, author of The Beer Mat Entrepreneur. This is Raise Your Game on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.